Hello, I'm Rachel Gilmore, your least favorite person's least favorite journalist. Welcome to Bubble Pop. This is the weekly show where we talk about some of the biggest headlines and juiciest news tidbits so you don't have to doom scroll. And for season two, as you guys know by now, we are doing it live. So just a reminder that if you want to support the show, you can subscribe on Patreon, on Substack, and YouTube, and Twitch, as well as anywhere that you like to listen. Before I introduce today's guests, a little housekeeping note. I will not have an episode next week as I'm going to be traveling Friday to MC a Gaza medical aid fundraiser, but I will be back on Halloween. Speaking of scary stuff involving lots of orange, today we're talking about the new Democratic Party. And I should mention before I launch fully into this intro that you guys, if you have any questions for today's guests, can ask them using the super chat function on YouTube. And I'm going to leave a little time at the end of the show to take those, provided they are appropriate. So, as I was saying, scary stuff involving lots of orange. It was a dark and stormy night when Canadians went to the polls in April. I'm just kidding, but it was a tough day for the NDP, which lost party status as Canadians rallied behind Mark Carney's Liberals in the face of a terrifying Trump presidency and his creepy conservative shadow here at home. Now the party is trying to answer one question. What happened? But for former NDP MP Peter Julian and former NDP candidate Jiwon Jung, that question isn't enough. They also want to know, what can the NDP become? And what do Canadians want it to be? That's why they've both launched respective efforts to figure that out. Respective, but complementary. Peter Julian's NDP Renewal Initiative and Jiwon Jung's Reclaim the NDP are two complementary efforts to try to bring Canada's NDP back from the brink. And that is why I am so excited to have them both on the show today to talk about this work. Peter, Jiwon, welcome to Bubble Pop.
Hi.
Thanks so much. And thank you for your work, Rachel. We have journalism is the front line of democracy. The democracy is under threat. You're doing amazing work to counter hate and disinformation. And we appreciate your efforts.
That's really kind. Thank you so much. I mean, you guys are literally doing democracy through your politics. So thank you to you, too. Before we dive into the nitty gritty of the efforts that you guys have undertaken to try to sort of figure out what's going on with the NDP and what it should become, I did want to ask you, about that dark and stormy night. I don't know why I keep calling it that. It's just I'm getting ready for Halloween. The election night. Peter, since you were one of the NDP's longest serving members of parliament, how did you feel on election night as you watched your party sort of face this massive setback and lost your own seat?
Well, we knew months in advance that that our campaign was off track, and so we fought in our riding. We were the last riding to fall. We needed 987 more people to stay with us. The canvassing was very clear. Unless we got to people and explained to them the importance of voting NDP, they ran off and they didn't vote for us. So in the final days, we had a magnificent team of 500 people out there. And we knew we were reaching a lot of people, but we didn't think we were reaching enough. And unfortunately, did not receive the supports to get those additional people, to knock on those additional doors. So it wasn't a surprise to me. It was devastating. And then, of course, in the aftermath, you have to clean up all of your offices. You have to find your staff, my extraordinary staff, new jobs. So it was a slow motion accident or collision that played out over a number of months. No surprise, but now we're committed to rebuilding. There is a need for the NDP in this country, and we need to rebuild our party.
When you mentioned that the supports weren't necessarily there at that tail end, was that a decision from sort of headquarters where there was mistakes made with respect to the allocation of those resources?
Yeah, we saw a lot of people going into Burnaby Central, and we needed some of those canvassers. They weren't available to us. And so this is the kind of mistake that is made in a campaign that is difficult then to basically to fix afterwards. That's why we need to make sure that the next time we go into a campaign, that we have the resources allocated to in a way that actually makes sure that we enhance our presence in Parliament. There's a need for the NDP. The difference between having 12 seats and being a recognized party is measurable. There are a whole range of parliamentary tools that you can use, 12 seats and more, that our magnificent seven MPs that are working extraordinarily hard aren't able to access because they are not a recognized party. That's why it was important for the party to make sure that they're putting the resources in the right place. And it's really, really important that we learn the lessons from this campaign and move forward as a renewed, reinvigorated, re-energized party.
Yeah. Jeevan, how about you? What was that election night like? How did you feel as the night progressed? Was anything about it a surprise?
For sure. On top of being a candidate for Etobicoke Centre, a riding that we always knew we would not win. It's been historically a conservative liberal riding with like a pretty close race. So I was a staffer for the party during the election as well. And so I wanted to be strategic with which riding I was supporting, the one we had the best chance in. And in my view, out in Toronto, on the west side of the city, it was Tyako and Parkdale High Park was our best chance with longtime MPP Butila Karpoche running in that riding federally for the first time. And so I was canvassing for her the entire day on election day, like 12, 13 hours straight, including going to the polls and like helping count the votes, things like that, for our own records. And I remember when I was sitting in that poll and I was working with the Elections Canada workers to note down what each poll looked like, it was pretty evident at that point that it looked like it was going to be a liberal landslide. And I think that translated nationally as well. People were voting out of a place of fear. And what they were telling me at the door on election day is that they were just so scared about the possibility of Pierre Poilievre being a prime minister. And they voted from that place of fear and they ended up voting against conservative more so than for liberals. And the riding ended up going liberal, even though it's a strongly historically NDP and liberal riding and people didn't need to necessarily do that. I think the national wave of fear really pushed people in that direction. And so it was a bit of a shock. I had held out faith for us to hold on to official party status. I was kind of really holding on to the idea of that 12 seat benchmark. I thought that Peter would keep a seat. I thought that all the incumbents had a great shot and that some star candidates like Butila Karpoche in Toronto, Joel Hardin in Ottawa, and so on. Like, I thought they had a really good shot. And I think in any other normal circumstances, they would have. So the outcome was definitely upsetting. But like Peter said, there were things pointing to that. Like, if you were knocking on doors the week leading up or even the month leading up to the election, it was pretty evident that people were feeling that fear, especially with, at the time, the real fear of the 51st state rhetoric from America.
Yeah, you know, I had this question further down for you guys, but I just feel like we're so well set up for it right now. I kind of just want to dig right into it. You know, I do feel like an overarching battle that the NDP is up against is the fact that fascism is on the rise. Poilievre is importing a lot of it. I mean, I reported this week, and Susan Delacour also noted this exact same thing, that he's literally mirroring language that we're seeing in Trump executive orders, in his fundraising emails and tweets and petitions that he's putting forth. At the same time, the liberals are kind of filling that fear gap where they are the option that a lot of people feel is the only viable one in the face of such a scary threat. Like, that fear level is so high. When that is a genuine threat, how do you convince people not to play it safe, I guess, for lack of a better word? Because that seems to be what they feel they're doing. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of issues with strategic voting, for example, and the resources available for that. But how do you convince people not to be scared and to support you guys in the face of what is a genuine concern? Who wants to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, I can kick us off just saying that you're absolutely correct. I think if we really take stock of what's happening around the world, and especially in the West, in Canada and in the US, it's a really scary time for everyone, especially for those at the margins of our society. And so I think it's completely understandable where people are coming from when they feel this fear and this concern and the need to be strategic and to be cautious and so on. And I think it's frankly shameful that the parties like the Liberal, the Status Quo Party, as well as, you know, this now far right leaning Conservative Party are kind of preying on that. They're exploiting people's fear and their worries for their own gain. And I think that's really concerning. And it's just the moment that we have to rise to as the third party. I think the really great thing about being in Canada is that fortunately we have real non-two-party system ahead of us. And so, yeah, I think you're totally right that we have a lot of barriers ahead of us in terms of just the infrastructure that these status quo establishment government parties have built around preying on people's fear. But I think if we come together as the 99%, you know, the average Canadian who works every day and is having a hard time affording life in the affordability crisis alongside our social issues and the rise of fascism, I think there really is a way forward. I think, for example, we could rally around electoral reform. We could rally around like a real strong Canadian identity. I think there's things we can identify for us to all find common ground on. Like, we don't have to all agree on with each other on everything. But I think if we're able to kind of find that bottom line of what holds us together and against the oppressive forces down south and at home, I think there is really a path forward.
Go ahead, Peter.
Well, I'm just going to add to what Jiwon said. Completely agree. We have to give people hope. I mean, there is increasing disparity, increasing inequality, rising homelessness. Families are struggling just to put food on the table, to make ends meet. Younger people have seen doors closed to them right across in terms of opportunity. And so what I think could have happened in the last election is the NDP presenting a bold platform. I gave people hope. And I think that's got to be the element that we bring to the next election campaign. Hope counters fear. And the reality is we have seen the last couple of generations sacrificed in the need for massive amounts of corporate welfare. I mean, the amounts are astronomical when you think of the bank bailouts, liquidity supports of $1 trillion, the $30 billion a year we spend in overseas tax havens. And I can add a whole range of other expenditures that are absolutely wasteful. And yet younger generations are being sacrificed. Seniors are homeless. Families can't keep a roof over their head. And we are struggling often to keep our heads above water in an economy and an affordability crisis that makes it extremely difficult to make ends meet. That's where the NDP historically has stepped up. We've been through this before. 1958, the CCF was devastated. We renewed and were reborn as the NDP. In 1995, we did the same thing. We renewed our party.
And, you did the same thing.
Pardon me?
I said you did the same thing in 1995, well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. A younger version of me. Yeah. And so we need to provide hope. I think that was the missing element, the kind of bold platform that people could rally around and give them hope. And the NDP is needed more than ever. So we need to put in place the nuts and bolts for that hope so that we can actually talk about solutions to what people are experiencing. And it is devastating, the affordability crisis that we've seen both under Conservatives, because the Conservatives were just as bad, and now under the current Liberal government, except for what the NDP was able to achieve, things like dental care that do make a difference in the lives of regular people.
Yeah. I guess the question I always come back to, and I'm even seeing people in our live chat saying, you know, I voted out of fear. I voted Liberal for the first time in this election. You know, I think what people have a hard time in the face of is sort of the numbers game, right? Like, there's growing Conservative support among the youth as well in this country, which is traditionally a more progressive leaning cohort. And we're seeing that shift. There isn't really a vote splitting happening on the right. And, you know, I would argue that the Liberals aren't on the left. I think they're centrist. So it's really just three different prongs completely. But a lot of people consider themselves Liberal or NDP voters And it feels as though there's sort of this strong base of conservative support that's growing, and the Liberal NDP are kind of fighting each other for votes, whereas the conservatives are kind of jumping around and grabbing some of that union vote, some of the left-wing sort of worker votes. I guess my question is, like, in the face of that reality where conservative support, right-wing support is on the rise, like, are we fighting an uphill battle here in a political system that wants to be a two-party system? And how do we address that in a way that allows Canadians to have a real democratic voice, especially when we don't have a government willing to enact electoral reform?
For sure. I just want to jump in on something you said about that three prongs, analogy. I think the reality in the youth, like you pointed out, but also the larger Canadian population, is that people are tired of how things happen. They want change. And I think what that really means in our political landscape is that people are sick of neoliberalism. People don't want what has been keeping things going the past decade, and the conservatives were able to really capitalize off of that by putting themselves as this alternative to this long-term Liberal government. I think the NDP, and the reason that, you know, for me personally, I'm really dedicated to the work we do at Reclaim NDP, is because I think the NDP could have risen to that moment. We unfortunately didn't, but I think we really can. I think it's not really more about, like, left or right. It's more so people want change. Like, people don't want things to be going the way it has been, you know, just housing just constantly rising while wages are stagnating and et cetera, et cetera. Hate rising, things like that. I think people just want to see something really shift in our climate politically. And I think the conservatives have been able to pose themselves as a viable alternative to the Liberals, when in reality they're really perpetuating the same rhetoric. And I think that if we kind of reframe it that way and stop aligning ourselves as, like, the better than the Liberals option, and more so a completely distinct new type of political option, then we would do much better.
Yeah. Peter, do you agree with that assessment?
What I found knocking on doors, and our team knocking on doors, is when you met conservative supporters, they don't actually support conservative policies. They don't support massive handouts to the wealthy. They don't support the massive amounts of corporate welfare that the conservatives put into place. They don't support the overseas tax havens. What they do support is things like pharmacare, dental care, affordable housing, the things that the NDP has championed. So those conversations are vitally important. We are inundated with right-wing propaganda through social media platforms that are dominated by billionaires, algorithms that force feed, particularly younger men, garbage, a toxic soup of videos. And when you actually have the conversations with them, that pushes aside the kind of garbage that is downloaded on them. And you get to the real heart of the matter. And many of them are struggling. Many of them want better opportunities for themselves. And then when you talk about NDP solutions, you get a different reaction from them. So those conversations are vitally important. I would suggest part of what we need to do with the NDP is get back to the conversations that are so vital. The idea that we can simply use ads or spend money in a way that is superficial to having the kinds of conversations that make a key difference in people's political attitudes and ultimately how they vote. This is something that we need to be re-galvanized and re-energized to doing. And I certainly am hopeful. When you have those conversations, people actually reject the kind of conservative garbage that is pumped on them. And they reject the idea of the status quo, which is where the Liberals seem to come from. They want bold solutions. The NDP has to be the vehicle to provide those bold solutions to Canadians.
Yeah. And I just want to add one more thing that just kind of came to my mind while I was hearing Peter speak, which is that I think a lot of people come from a place of wanting to take care of themselves and their loved ones, right? In this country, we're seeing, yeah, like people are really scared about ideas like crime and these catch and release, quote unquote, policies. They're worried about what that means for their kids on the street and what it means if there's these social programs that are being funded by taxpayer dollars, but the Liberal parties are the government is mismanaging that. And I think I can empathize where they're coming from, because I totally hear people understanding that these social programs in theory are good, but when they're carried out by a neoliberal government, the one we've had for over a decade, they really do butcher it, and they prioritize giving contracts to private corporations and things like that. And so I think people vote conservative sometimes, thinking that the term conservative, conservatism as an ideology economically would mean being more conservative with taxpayer dollars. But the reality is that's not what they're campaigning on, and it's not what they would do if they were in government. What we're seeing with the Liberal Party shifting rightwards and with the conservatives being the official opposition, but voting through everything that the Liberals are pushing is more burden on taxpayers. Increasing defense spending when it's not needed and only to appease Donald Trump, like things that aren't in line with what Canadians actually need and want. But when they're talking to Canadians, they pretend they do. They pretend they see people's concerns about how taxpayer dollars are being misused and promise to change that. But in reality, they're not. They're taking that money themselves. They're getting paid by that money as elected officials. And every MP beyond their own salary gets thousands of dollars a month for travel, for events, gets hundreds of thousands a year to staff people. Oftentimes they staff their own family members or friends. Like, it's this entire system of our federal government that we really need to be honest about. Like, I'm here to really be frank and talk about it in a bit of a less quote-unquote nuanced way, because I think it's time for us to be really upfront with each other about what it really means when someone is voting conservative or representing the Conservative Party, because I genuinely think that it comes from a place of exploitation.
Yeah, I mean, we got a perfect example of what you just described in this last week with the announcement of bail reforms. And, both the Conservatives and the Liberals have been pushing for this. The Liberals basically just took a lot of the Conservative policy on this, but it's creating more folks who are incarcerated, who are legally innocent. When you make it harder for people to get bail, right now we're seeing a situation before these are even implemented, these changes, where the majority of people in our who are incarcerated, I believe in Ontario, are legally innocent. They are awaiting trial or awaiting bail. So if you make that harder, that's just going to put more of a strain on these resources and cost more money to have these people incarcerated. So, you're not actually addressing the root causes of crime, which would save money in the long run. Peter, I think you're going to jump in there.
Just because you're raising a very key point here. The Liberals and Conservatives are voting together on that. They voted together on Bill C-5, which pushed aside Indigenous rights and environmental obligations by Canada's corporations. They're supporting C-2. The kinds of pushing aside of labor rights that we saw with Mark Carney and the Liberals trying to force flight attendants back to work, and we've seen this with postal workers and railway workers, that is something that a Stephen Harper government did as well. And now we have the drive to eliminate home delivery, which has a profound impact on seniors and people with disabilities and communities right across the country. That's what Stephen Harper tried to do. Now Mark Carney wants to do it. And we are anticipating now an austerity budget, a Stephen Harper budget, in a little less than a month, that will cut back dramatically on public services. Now, at the same time, massive amounts of corporate welfare, almost $20 billion spent last year on corporate outsourcing, rather than providing the supports to build the kind of public service that provides excellent public services. I mean, this what we have is two parties that are Tweedledum and Tweedledee, and there is definitely a place for the NDP. But what we need to do is provide the kinds of direction, the leadership that people see, that indicates that it's going to make a difference in their lives, that ultimately the affordability crisis is going to be addressed, the gouging that people get when they go to the grocery store will be addressed, the lack of affordable housing will be addressed. These are things that the NDP has championed in the past. We have a track record, but we need to put it out in such a way with the conversations that we have across the country, that people can understand that voting NDP will make a positive difference in their lives.
Yeah. And, you know, I really do want to dig into, and I we will after I want to give you guys a chance to talk about your efforts to actually sort of dig into the problems the NDP has and what you're doing to change that. But I want to, after that, talk about communication, because I think that at the end of the day is a lot of what this all comes down to. And unfortunately, you guys, your ideas don't exactly have the billionaire tech platform owners on side. So you're not going to get the algorithmic push that someone like Pierre Poilievre might get. But before we dive into that, I do want to give you guys the opportunity, because otherwise I'm going to keep talking your ear off about policy, to talk about the efforts that you're both sort of leading separately, but also working on together, because it's all complementary. There is, so for those listening right now, there is the party itself is conducting a postmortem, but then we have these two sort of complementary but different efforts from Peter and Jiwon and those who you're both respectively working with to remake and reimagine what the NDP could be. So I guess I'd like to give you each the opportunity to sort of give your pitch on what exactly you're doing and also how they're different and kind of complement each other. So Peter, I don't know if you want to go first and then we'll hop over to Jiwon.
Sure. And the party does have a review and renewal process. The input ends in 2 weeks. Original deadline was September 17th. It's been extended to the end of October. I think the issue for renewal is this is a process that's going to take us right through to the March convention. And so we launched a couple weeks ago the NDP's renewal initiative, and we've been really overwhelmed by the supports, people wanting to step forward to be volunteers, people going on our website, looking at our survey, offering suggestions. We're now in the process of putting together some policy initiatives that we would be putting out to our membership, to riding associations across the country, to affiliates and allied organizations for feedback. And that's how it worked back in 1995. We provided for information going out. There was a lot of feedback that came back. And ultimately, there was consensus documents, platform recommendations around globalization and social policy and the economy, a substantial change to the structure of the party. Back in 1995, a renewal declaration, a statement of principles. What we're doing is modernizing that. So some of the documentation from 30 years ago is remarkably prescient today. And some of it is very clearly no longer relevant. And so this type of back and forth grassroots generated debate and discussion is absolutely essential to renewing our party. What we want to do is give the tools to the new leader, whoever that person is, at the end of March, rather than the person stepping forward and then having to look at platform recommendations and structure, to have all of that in place for the end of March so that we can move forward as a movement for an election that could well be in 2026. The Liberals, according to many rumors, are wanting to get a majority and wanting to force elections. NDP has to be ready, particularly at this time when we're needed more than ever.
Yeah. And Jiwon, so what sort of is the Reclaim movement, and how is it both distinct and complementary to what Peter just described?
So Reclaim Canada's NDP is a movement that we've been running for a couple months now, and I'd say its main focus is renewing internal party democracy in the NDP. I think we're very structurally focused. And I think renewal is really, really awesome. And I'm so glad that Peter is doing the work that him and everyone else is doing, because they're really about renewing the NDP's platform policy-wise and just the presence we take in a political way. But I think Reclaim is about building structure, because kind of alluding back to what I was saying about how people only really see the alternative to the Liberal status quo being the Conservatives, I think we as a party, the NDP, have long failed to rise to the moment. We haven't presented ourselves as a legitimate, viable option. And so the mission of Reclaim NDP is to bring the NDP into the hands of the working class, of the grassroots, of this, of the 99%, and at the same time, make it a viable political option. Because the reality is we can have the best policies ever, you know, hypothetically, but if we're not getting elected, we can't get things done. So what that looks like in action is that a lot of people don't know, and I didn't know this until actually this year, that the NDP has these local branches called riding associations or electoral district associations across the 343 federal ridings. There's one association each, and they're supposed to be like local volunteer teams that make up those associations and that get involved in their community, whether that be doing fundraisers or doing like a community barbecue or maybe tabling at festivals and walking in Pride Fair or things like that. It's supposed to be this force of the front line and the face of the party on people you can trust, the neighbors you know, and the people whose like backyards that you can go hang out in. But we haven't had that. Like we historically have over 100 NDP local riding associations that are not active. And I think the work that we're doing at Reclaim is really about showing people that political organizing is accessible and making it accessible, because for a long time, it's been a bit of an exclusive club in a way. Like I come from a very nonpartisan background, even though I've always been politically inclined, because I come from a very like mistrusting place for the government and electoral politics. I, for a long time, like didn't really believe in the government saving us in any way. But until in the past year, the NDP and the last caucus that Peter was a part of really pushed for radical changes like dental care and anti-scab legislation and pharmacare. So seeing those electoral successes, I realized that we can kind of form this conjunction of this larger social movement for progressive development alongside of an electoral branch. And so what I'm hoping for is that the NDP puts, you know, their money where their mouth is at, as well as like walking the talk and being showing up in their communities. Like I don't want the NDP to just talk about the housing crisis and about the food affordability crisis. I want us to be showing up to food banks and volunteering. I want us to be helping them do canned food drives. I want us to be providing the support that people need to know how to apply for social housing. Like I want us to be real staples in our communities in tangible ways, not just showing up every couple of years and asking for people to vote for us and promising a bunch of things that they never hear about again. So yeah, Reclaim is about reclaiming the party, right? For the working class and for the average Canadian and for the everyday Canadian. And also very notably coming at it from a really intersectional and inclusive place, because I don't think it's about abandoning quote unquote identity politics. I don't think it's about abandoning any of our existing values. It's about connecting with people and showing them why it all benefits us all when we really understand how we're all marginalized in a capitalistic and racist and sexist society, and seeing what we can to turn that around.
One thing that
just build on G1's comments. In both cases, all of the volunteers the NDP Renewal Initiative for Reclaim, we're doing this on our own time with our own resources, paying out of pocket. I mean, that doesn't show the importance of reestablishing the NDP, that people now, at a time when the NDP has very few resources nationally, that we're willing to invest with our own money and our own time to rebuild this party. If that doesn't show the importance of having the movement, then I don't know what does. All of these volunteers are giving immeasurably of their own efforts because we believe the NDP needs to come back stronger than ever.
Yeah, so I guess, how can people get involved if anyone's listening and wants to have a say in what the NDP, the direction it heads in and what it looks like in the future? What would you tell them?
Be a member, buy a membership. It does cost money. It's depending on where you are in the country, a membership costs between $0 to $25 a year. It's about $5 to $10 a year on average. And being a member means that you get a say. Like, I think a lot of people are disillusioned by the NDP, and I do not blame them. I think there's a lot of issues with this party, and I think it's the place we need to start is recognizing that. But also, we can only make change if we all have a stake in it, right? We all need to be stakeholders, because we are. We're all working class Canadians. And so I think just going over that ledge of getting that membership, just so that you can join your local EDA, show up to NDP meetings, nominate your local NDP candidate. If you can, if you're a local community leader, think about running as an NDP candidate. whenever that next election is going to be, and starting to talk to people about it in your community and seeing what people in your area need. I think just see how you can fit into this larger movement. Like, don't just see it as something that's happening on the side and that you are observing. I think really positioning yourself as someone who can take action and understanding that you have that autonomy is kind of the first step. And then that from there, you can get involved in whatever way you want. Whether if you want to get involved with Reclaim directly, we're doing our own town halls on how we can improve these EDAs in a structural way, as well as getting ready to bring people to convention in Winnipeg. Yeah, if you'd be interested in going out to Winnipeg at the end of March and seeing Peter and I out in Winnipeg, Manitoba, let us know. We'll help you get connected with your EDA and get you there, get you nominated as a delegate and so on, of course, following the democratic processes. And I'll let Peter jump on the more like policy front and the renewal front.
Well, ndprenewal.ca is basically our portal, which provides some of the documentation from the last renewal effort and a whole range of other documents, as well as a whole range of policy questions and survey questions that we are putting out to riding associations across the country. Juwan is right about people getting involved. If you have the wherewithal to make a contribution to the party and to the local riding association, that's great. If you have the time to provide to the local riding association, a lot of them are starting to do door knocking already. And becoming a member of the party allows you to have a say, in who the future leader will be, allows you to have a say your local candidate, a whole range of responsibilities and rights come with membership of the NDP as well. We believe in the face of what was a catastrophe. I mean, April 28th was the worst election since the founding of the Cooperative Commonwealth Federation nearly a century ago. I mean, that it was absolutely the most abysmal election results we've ever had. But what I found with our local team is they were committed and ready to go out within days. And we've been knocking on doors all summer and into the fall. And what we're hearing is people want to see the NDP back stronger than ever. They are dismayed often by Carney's move to the right. He was saying basically, don't vote for Polyev, I'll be progressive. And then he turned into conservative light and is doing this many of the same things that Stephen Harper wanted to do or tried to do. And so my sense is that I feel optimistic if we can put the nuts and bolts of renewal into place, if we can reclaim the party, all of these initiatives that are taking place with volunteers getting involved, if we can do these things, we will be a viable political force in the next election. And that gives hope for Canadians who are struggling to put food on the table, that there will be a party standing up for them and a party that will standing against what Ottawa has become, which is just this cesspool of corporate welfare, where massive amounts of money go to the wealthiest and the most privileged in society, and very little goes to the people who actually need it most.
And I just want to add on the leadership race front that it's really exciting what we're seeing. We've got five full amazing candidates on the slate, competing to be the next leader of the NDP. And I just want to really encourage everyone here to try to get involved with the leadership campaigns. Like, if you identify with one of the candidates, you think they would really be the right person to lead us towards a better Canada, get involved with that campaign. Like, I think Reclaim and Renewal are these larger, quote unquote, agnostic movements when it comes to the leadership race. But what I'm really passionate about is making any political thing in Canada more accessible, including a leadership race for the NDP. So, for example, if you want to, go to reclaimcanadasndp.ca, there's a link to join our Discord server, and we'll be doing a watch party next Wednesday for the first leadership forum, because it's taking place in person in Ottawa, but a lot of us are not in Ottawa. So if people want to hop on a little voice call on our Discord server and just kind of make little side comments and have our own reactions to the leadership forum that's coming up, that the CLC is hosting. Like, that's one way we're looking at it. I'm working with a lot of the equity commissions in the party to make sure that those voices are being platformed when it comes to the leadership race, right? Like, for example, the party has a people living with disabilities commission that hasn't been super supported so far, but I'm working with their chair on trying to organize an accessible leadership forum. So that would look like a digital virtual leadership forum, maybe with an in-person component, that has professional sign language interpreters in both official languages and so on, right? There's these like different ways that we can platform people and make the party actually inclusive in a way that benefits everyone, including working with the Racial Justice Commission and the Indigenous Peoples Commission to get their own forums on their own issues, the Queer Commission, the 2SLGBTQIA plus Commission on getting a forum with all the candidates and trying to understand what their history has been in advocating for queer rights in Canada. So there's these different ways that I think anyone can really get involved at any point. If you want to organize a watch party in your town for Wednesday, go for it. If you want to invite a couple friends over to your basement and like throw the CLC forum up on the screen and just eat some popcorn and shoot the, you know, about it, go for it. Like, I think there's there's kind of a barrier between what people consider like official political involvement and like these official events and what we do at home. But I think we really want to identify that the political is personal and the personal is political, and that we are all stakeholders in what's happening in this country and in this world, right? So just seeing how personal it is and talking to your friends about it. Like, maybe you don't want to talk about politics at work or with your friends, but it's kind of important, right? It's the foundation of our society. So maybe see what you can do in your local communities and just spread the word and engage with the leadership candidates. I think that's the last thing I would really emphasize, just because this leadership race is a really exciting opportunity, especially for folks like me, because this is my first ever leadership race. I was not of voting age last time.
It is wild to me how young you are with all that you're doing. It's impressive. Although it makes sense that you have the energy you have. I did want to pivot slightly to the, you know, one thing that a theme I was sort of picking out, especially in what Jiwon was saying, you know, you were talking about how you got excited about the NDP during the last sort of government with pharmacare, with dental care, like with all of these discussions that were happening and the ways in which the NDP sort of pushed those issues. But a lot of Canadians, like the rhetoric that I was seeing from the public, there was a disconnect there. A lot of them didn't seem to understand, despite Polyev's effort to frame the Liberal NDP deal as a coalition, which it wasn't, but, you know, they weren't really understanding that the NDP was behind that push or not really crediting the NDP with that work. There's clearly a communications issue with the NDP. I mean, there's just something that's not connecting. And I wanted to ask you guys, in an atmosphere, in a political climate where, and I understand that there's, you know, an uphill battle, as I mentioned, with respect to the tech billionaires who control a lot of these platforms and are shaping them in their political image, particularly Twitter. But the conservatives have clearly figured out how to utilize the influencer network and the podcast network, the new media sphere, and get their messaging out in a way that is really driving the political agenda in this country. They are really commanding the conversation and directing the issues that a lot of people are responding to. How do you disrupt that? And how do you get in there so people hear you?
If you don't mind, Peter, I can kick us off just because I come from a bit of an influencer background, to be frank. Like, I think the digital age is what I've grown up in. You know, I was way too young when I first got social media and all those things, right? I think it's an interesting time. It's a completely new era that we're in, where people are just exposed to so much online, and it's an indiscriminately large amount of content that can bring people down any type of pipeline politically, right? And also just socially. And so I think I will say that as someone who worked for the party and as someone who works professionally as a communications person, I think the party, the NDP, has a lot to improve on from a technical standpoint, but also just on the point of like values and just how we do things just from a really base level, because I think, you know, no shade to the people who've been running this party, because I'm really grateful for the work that they have done. But I think it's really time to acknowledge that we need to bring in more perspectives, maybe younger voices on what's happening in the digital age and on the digital front of things, and what people really need to see, and what will actually help communicate those messages. Because I totally hear you. I think communication breakdown was a really big issue with the NDP, because I didn't really know about all the things that the NDP were doing until I decided to look into it. It's not something I came across. I had to do personal research on it. I had to go on rcommons.ca and see how the different parties voted on different bills and what bills they tabled. And only from that, I understood that the NDP were really different. Only from going into these individual MPs' websites and reading about their work there that they had written and put on their own websites, was I able to find out that, for example, NDP MP Leah Gazan has made historic advancements in addressing the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and two-spirited people crisis in Canada, which is a national emergency. So it's those things that are not talked about that are a big issue to me, that we haven't been able to bring them to center stage. We haven't been able to control the narrative and the stage. And so I think in order to do that, we need to let there be more voices contributing to strategy and also on execution. Like, I think the NDP has long been a bit scared to really mobilize in a grassroots way, influencers and other like forms of digital advocacy. But I think if we really respect the work that's happening and understand how important it is, then we'd be able to kind of reframe around that and push for the messaging that we need to get out there.
Peter, what were your thoughts on that?
Juwan's absolutely right that we haven't been effective in getting information across. I mean, the new dental care program, certainly people in my area understand that the NDP not only fought for it, but had to fight for it a dozen different times, because the Liberals really did not want to implement the program. The new PharmaCare program for people with diabetes is now, Carney is now turning around and renouncing, moving further to other types of medication, even though people are paying $1,000 a month often for heart medication that keeps them alive. The anti-scab legislation, the affordable housing investments that we forced the government to put into place over the last two budgets, all of those things would not have happened without the NDP. And yet we didn't communicate them, I don't believe, in an effective way. And I think Juwan's right that there's not the diversity of voices within our party and our movement. It's a very closed shop, and that has been to our detriment. Not only are we not getting the information across, but we're also making the kinds of strategic errors that we saw in the last campaign. And not meeting the moment at a time when people wanted to see bold proposals, solutions that would actually make a difference in their lives. We held our platform hidden, close to our chest, and announced it just a few days before the election. At that point, people had already voted in advance polls. And so it's broadening the voices, which is why both of our volunteer initiatives have come to being. We want to mobilize the grassroots. We want to make sure that people's voices are heard. That is going to strengthen our party. And in the digital sphere, we need to counter what is a preponderant far-right bias proposed by billionaires with the algorithms that we know that force-feed right-wing garbage into so many people's brains. What we need to do is create that space where there's alternatives. And your work here is vital, as is so many others, to actually get facts across, to give people hope. We need to put all the resources we can into enhancing those voices and making them heard right across the digital sphere.
Yeah, I mean, I think a really good example of where you guys got close, but then sort of tripped up was in the election campaign. Jagmeet Singh was trying to embrace the sort of online content creator world and these influencers, bring them onto the campaign, have that transparency. But then when the National Post went after one of these creators in really bad faith, you know, framing her despite the fact that she was an advocate for chronic illness and an outspoken sort of educator in that space, framing her as an OnlyFans creator and implying that she created a disrespectful Holocaust video, when I would argue, based on me having seen that video, that is not a fair characterization of it. She just compared what is happening with Palestine to the Holocaust. And that is a comparison that Holocaust scholars who study these and understand the Holocaust as a definition have also made. So I guess it's the issue that maybe certain folks in NDP leadership don't understand the ways in which bad faith campaign and press can be mobilized by sort of bad actors to frame people and create a narrative, and don't understand how to push back against those bad faith narratives, and instead are willing to sort of throw these voices under the bus. Or because I think that a part of the reason that attack happened, I mean, maybe this is a little tinfoil hat actually, but it's, you guys were touching on something that actually really could have worked there and then caved at the first sort of counter to that effort. So what do you think of that situation, and how did you learn from it?
Yeah, as someone who has been organizing in the pro-Palestine space for the past couple of years, since the ongoing genocide in Gaza had really worsened in 2023, like I think I was really glad before to see that the party was taking a pro-Palestine stance, and then really disappointed when the fallout happened with the way that the party treated Jessica Wetz, who was that influencer you're referring to. And I've reached out to her personally and offered like an apology in the ways that I can and in the extent that I can, because I think that was a terrible way to treat anyone, especially someone who is doing free work for you as an influencer, and also as a person that lives with invisible disabilities that has the issues of having a lived experience as a woman. Like, I really appreciate her content, and I think she's doing really critical work. So I just want to say, like, again, like, I think the party needs to apologize to Jessica and really make that right. I think specifically the person who gave the comments to the National Post against Jessica from the point of the NDP was Anne McGrath, who used to be the national director and then was the secretary to Jagmeet and now is no longer with the party. I believe she's working privately as a consultant at a private political consultant firm that's started by Mark Carney's campaign manager. So I would really invite Anne McGrath, for example, specifically to offer a personal apology to Jessica Wetz for how the party treated her, because I think it's really terrible. I think we really need to be able to identify what our core values are. And I think we need to be entrusting power with the right people within this movement and within this party, because if we are operating in a way where something like this can slip through, like, clearly we're doing something wrong internally. I think we need to be able to identify what our true core values are, including being unapologetically and bravely progressive and inclusive and strongly pro-Palestine and anti-genocide. And we're only going to be able to do that if we hold each other accountable. So I'd love to see some accountability from the party. And that's something I've been asking for through Reclaim for a while. I've been asking for the higher ups in the party, a lot of them being white people, and not to dog on like people's race. But I think like a lot of the times when you live in a colonial country like Canada and you have those privileges, you have blind spots. And so I can understand where people might come from thinking that it's fine what they're doing, but in reality, they're hurting people and they're hurting a larger movement. So I'd love to see some accountability.
I think Jessica deserves an apology. I also think that the party needs to have the courage of its convictions. And I think part of what we saw unravel over the course of the last campaign was because we didn't really know in the platform and what we were proposing, we didn't have the confidence, the courage of our convictions, then we folded so quickly when the National Post, which has an axe to grind, is heavily taxpayer subsidized. That's the irony of this. The Post Media receives massive amounts of taxpayer subsidies, and yet is not a responsible journalistic endeavor at all. And we just folded. This is the kind of thing that then helps to undermine credibility in our party. Any bold stand that we take is going to receive a massive reaction. There is no doubt. When we talk about billionaires paying their fair share of taxes, that's going to provoke a reaction. We need to have the courage of our convictions. We need to build from the grassroots so that we are able to push through that far right infrastructure and this pushback from centrists that support the existing status quo, so that we can provide hope to Canadians. And that is just one example of the NDP not having the solid base, the grassroots base, and the courage to move forward. And the next campaign has to be different. And that's why we are doing the work that we're doing.
Yeah, I feel like, honestly, that's the model that Zoran Mamdani is nailing, which is, you know, everyone's looking at him being like, how does he have this secret sauce? And part of it's just that he's got an incredible amount of charisma. But I also think that it's the fact that he not only has figured out how to communicate in an accessible and clear and bold and unapologetic way, but he's also understood the bad faith nature of the pushback from the billionaire class that he is facing and knows not to cave to that. And I think that that's the element that a lot of these sorts of communications miss, is they fail to have that bravery and have that backbone in the face of the bad faith pushback, which can be really loud, particularly with the both sidesism in our traditional media apparatus, where they do tend to elevate even bad faith blowback as legitimate blowback. So I think that it's really a question of understanding how to see through that and be strong in your convictions. So I only have about 4 minutes left in our usual time, and I don't want to keep you guys extra long. We do have one audience question that came in throughout the interview today, and I want to take that. But before I pull that up, I'll give people a second if they have any others to ask, although we only have a couple minutes here. And while people use that time, did you guys want to tell people where they can keep up with your work and the work of your respective initiatives? Jiwon, you can go first if you'd like.
Yeah, I'm Jiwon Jung _official on all platforms, but also our work at Reclaim is under reclaim.ndp on all platforms, social media wise, and then the website is reclaimcanadasndp.ca.
Great. Thank you so much. And Peter, where can people keep up with you?
ndprenewal.ca. But of course, as well, we have our website available on all social media platforms as well. And the reality is, the more people stepping forward, the better. We've had dozens and dozens of people offer to be part of the Renewal Initiative just since we launched a couple of weeks ago. And we're working through now getting those folks involved in the campaign. The importance that Jiwon attached to getting involved in the party, I can't stress it enough as well. Joining up with the party, getting involved in your local riding association, there's a wide variety of ways to help out right now and help build the party. And your voice and your time and any other resources you could provide to the party is essential for our rebuilding, so that we're ready when the next political moment comes. And that could well be in the next few months.
Yeah, and we do have a town hall coming up for those in the Metro Vancouver area. It's a virtual town hall taking place on October 26th on the Sunday. Peter will be speaking, as well as former MP Bonita Zerillo. Going forward, we're also going to be having a Vancouver Island town hall, a rural BC town hall, Alberta town hall. I think a Manitoba one is coming up, and then the rest of the country. So please keep in touch and keep an eye out for stuff that's happening in your local community, because we're also doing in-person events, which is crazy to say because everything's virtual nowadays. But I'm looking at doing an in-person event out in Winnipeg next month. So if anyone listening is out there, hit us up and we'll get connected.
Great. Thank you so much, guys. And I'll just shout out our super chats and throw you guys this one last question, and then I'll let you go because you're probably very busy and I'm going to be going a few minutes over. I'm so sorry. So first of all, thank you so much, Barry Cook, who just generously complimented my analysis, which I appreciate very much. And we have a question from Victor Simosu, who says, how can we trust the NDP won't also drift right? As I'm assuming he means that in reference to how the Conservatives have gone far right and Carney's Liberals are effectively a progressive Conservative party in the practice of the sorts of policies they're implementing. So he says, how can we trust the NDP won't also drift right when some of its own leadership candidates call left-wing criticism, quote, purity tests? I'll leave it up to you guys who wants to take that. You can both give a little answer to it if you'd like. It's a concern that I've heard a lot from folks about the NDP, about a concern of a centrist drift.
Yeah, I in all my organizing before and during the work I'm doing with NDP now, I lead with being anti-racist, feminist, decolonial, accessible, and pro-queer rights and all those things. And I think it's not just a cherry on top kind of thing. It's fundamental to being a progressive and leftist party. And so I personally, we put out a statement, Reclaim Canada's NDP put out a statement about this whole identity politics narrative that we can somehow blame the party's shortcomings and that we should shift away from identifying with marginalized communities and their fight for justice. And I wholeheartedly disagree. And I've told this directly to the team of this one specific leadership candidate, and it's an ongoing conversation. I think we just need to be able to control that narrative. I think we want to keep the window of discussion on the par of being an inclusive party. Like, that's like the bare minimum, in my opinion. And I think hopefully the work that I'm doing and that everyone else is doing will make sure that we can ensure that this doesn't happen. And so if you're worried about the party, about the NDP drifting right or abandoning marginalized communities, that's a super fair concern to have. My biggest suggestion would be to get involved and make sure it doesn't happen yourself and work directly against it.
The NDP has to be resolutely anti-hate at a time when the far right is using hate as a mobilizing tool. And that means being against misogyny and homophobia and transphobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, racism, all of those elements. We have to stand with marginalized communities because that is the essence of our being. But at the same time, we need to mobilize the grassroots. And that's where I think I'm confident that we're not going to see a slide to the right or this idea of centrism. When you talk to NDP members, both ones that are in our party and those that are coming back, they are resolutely progressive and resolutely anti-hate. And so I think the bulwark is having more of that grassroots democracy within our party. That will assure that we be the movement that we believe most Canadians want to see resolutely and courageously, democratically on the left.
Great. Well, thank you so much, you guys, for this time today. And I have to say, as I was researching for this interview and looking at the efforts you guys are undertaking, there was a little bit of excitement in the air just at the prospect of any political party listening so openly to what Canada wants from them in the face of such a dramatic sort of shattering the idea that you might rebuild with real and true feedback from Canadians is, I think, a really positive thing for democracy, no matter where you stand politically. And it's exciting. It's an exciting time. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming on the show. And I hope to speak with you again soon. And good luck with your efforts.
Thank you for everything you do, Rachel.
Yeah, thank you for being a real bulwark for democracy and against thank hate you. And disinformation.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Bubble Pop. I'm Rachel Gilmore, your least favorite person's least favorite journalist. If you enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing on YouTube, Patreon, Substack, or wherever you like to listen. You can also find me on TikTok, Instagram, Twitch, and Blue Sky. I'd like to give a special thank you to Hans Vivian Wenzel for making the incredibly groovy music for Bubble Pop. You can find more of his stuff on Spotify under the artist name Hans. That's a lowercase h with an exclamation mark. Thank you again for spending this time with me. This is my dream job. I know I say that every week, but that's because it's true every week, and I couldn't do it for one second without your support. So thank you, and I'll see you next time.